Nobody really want fuego. Masayo will bring fire down worse than Waco. Buy you some coffee and Lego, your egos, your sandwich with mayo and two slices of mayo. Sitting at home on the couch playing Halo, but the Masayo ain't playing no wagos. Games, women and pants gonna get it. Flames, brothers keeping no commandments. Same, calling our armies a favor. Event with your NATO and soldiers with Dracos. Just tell me, how can you stop a tornado or bury the lava from the volcano? They really can't, bro. They have to pay, bro. The most I say so. So in chase they go for all the wicked atrocities they owe. For all their wicked atrocities they owe. From San Diego to Trinity Tobago, I'm spitting these words so our Israelites they know. Keeping commandments the only way we grow, so we can defeat the nation Galileo. Nation Galileo, get it, cause they pale. He's bringing them hell for every bill of sale. So family, just examine yourself. When that fuego come, you don't wanna get left. Forsake your sins so you complete the test. Then you can have complete rest from all your stress. Fight to do right to your very last breath, or stay wicked and receive second death. Destruction of enemies is muy bueno. Make sure that's one of the things that you pray for. Into the kingdom, the sinners, they can't go. The sinners can't go. So we say, hasta luego, hasta luego.
Brothers really don't want fuego. Sisters really don't want fuego. Nobody really want fuego. From the one that's super dead.
Turn it.
Fuegos really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Fuegos really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Nobody really want fuego.
Hey, from the one that's super dead.
Fuego.
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 Brother, you don't want that fuego.
You don't want that fuego.
Fuego.
Fuego. Fuego.
Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Native Latin and Black Lost History Show. I'm Captain Yahshua, and today we have visiting from Seattle.
Officer Yari.
Woo, Charlie Wangle in the house.
You know it.
go ahead, brothers, introduce yourself.
Shalom, Israel. Soldier Uziel.
Shalom, Israel. This is Soldier Uriel.
I got the double U's today.
Yeah, I know that.
I got on the show with us. On the show. I got the soldiers. That's your new nickname. The soldiers. All praise to the Most High for another Sabbath and being able to broadcast the show out to our people. Just a little housekeeping. If call-in number is 516-531-9797, 516-531-9797, just in case you want to call in questions, comments on the topic at hand, all right? If you'd like to get more information about your true nationality, what you need to do to repent and keep the faith in Jesus Christ, the Black Messiah, you can go to www.israelunite.org. That's israelunite.org. And then after Sabbath is over, if you're looking to buy Israelite apparel, music, what have you, you can go to originalloyalty.com. That's originalloyalty.com. So I am going to continue on with this week's episodes on the free trade piece, which kind of got cut from last week. So last week we spoke, you know, I'm very ambitious when we do the shows, and I'm thinking that I can cover, like, multiple topics. So I try to mash them all together. But it depends on how the spirit guides us, right? So kind of the way we are on the show. Have you done the show with us before?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, like, it's more conversational. I like for the information to come out. And then, of course, commentary, right? So I have his brothers here, so saying prior to we went on air, right? Because I walked in and it was like so silent here, and I was like, the other thing about the soldiers is that they're men of few words, which is good because, you know, the chatty brothers not too dependent, you know. Right. So you're good. They're good, but the radio show not the time for y'all to have that quiet spirit, all right? So, you know, obviously decently and in order, but if you have some thoughts and you want to say some stuff. And I know you do. You be commenting on the group, so I know you be – you look at – I know your brother that thinks and – right? So I see it. I see you like, hey, I was thinking of this way to my spirit, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then you're just so busy now that – but I know you're like that too, though, because before you got busy, you used to be ruminating on things and stuff like that as well. And then, of course, the lifetime politician, Charlie Mangle. Don't he look like Charlie Wrangle? Yes, he does. He's like Charlie Wrangle in his heyday when he was younger. A lot of people don't know who Charlie Wrangle is. I'm going to have to show the brothers this. It was the hair that made it. What you do with that hairstyle, man. Did we make you change your hair, brother? Yeah. Also thinks a lot and has a lot of good ideas. So by all means, as we speakers bring this up. So I'm going to give a little segue here a bit about Free Train, and then while I go ahead and post links as I normally do, feel free if you have your commentary or
So, you know, last week we went through the whole doctrine, the family, thoroughly, this, so many other things, the United States is so big on treaties, words, different things like that, and we have all these different places, and the whole doctrine was one of the basis. Till this day of how they feel, not just in Latin America, but global here, international policy, but largely, you know, what is Latin America, Caribbean, pertains to this side of the world, right? Right, you know, North America, major mass on this side, and policy inspired how they hear backyard. So we started to touch on trade. I didn't get it because it was on the show. I'm using a lot of this book as a reference, part of the empire, quite a bit.
Just looking at that, by and large, you know, they're fleeing conditions You know, this is the point that I try to drive home. They're fleeing conditions that were largely created by the United States' involvement in their economies and in their region. You know, so it's not like it's something where, you know, they're just, oh, let me come to America because it's so great. A lot of people would like to stay there. I mean, they're leaving their families. They're leaving, you know, leaving children behind, loved ones. And it's because of the stress that's going on over there. Like, it's really just kind of been magnified, and it's really coming to a head. Venezuela is a great example of it. When I was going over the Venezuela stuff, we were talking about how, you know, Venezuela was one of the wealthiest countries in Latin America. And yet, here you have this condition that they're going through where people are eating out of garbage cans.
Right.
And, you know, nobody's really asking themselves, you know, why and how did this happen? We're just kind of saying, well, it must be, you know, the dictator's fault that's over them. And to some extent, that's true, right? I mean, it's not like it's inaccurate, but there's a lot more to it. There's a different dynamic going on there. All right, I'm still posting here, so if you got something you want to bring up.
Yeah, can I get Deuteronomy 28:33-34? Going back to, like, a lot of times we see this as it might be just a simple thing, but this is what God said it to be a sign. Actually, read 45 real quick.
45?
Mm-hmm.
This is the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 28, verse 45. Moreover, all these curses shall be upon thee and shall pursue thee and overtake thee till thou be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Because thou hearkenest not unto the Lord, voice of the Lord thy God, to keep his commandments and his statutes, which he commanded to thee.
And so, like Cat was saying, people often ask themselves, oh, well, why is this happening? How did this happen? It's, we didn't hearken to keep the commandments, and we didn't want to do it with joy and gladness. Read 33 and 34.
Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 33. The fruit of thy land and all the labors, the fruit of the land,
mm-hmm.
all thy labors shall a nation which thou knowest not eat up, and thou shalt be only oppressed and crushed away.
And that's what we're seeing, and because of that, read on.
So that thou shalt be made mad mm-hmm. for the sight of thine eyes, which thou shalt see.
And that's what's going on. Like, even all through there, they're trying to get away from something that's killing them inside. They're seeing what's going on, and they're like, you know what? There has to be a better condition that we can get to. And it's, you know, at one point it's like, dang, it's sad. And but when you read 45, you realize, okay, these things, you know, when you look throughout all the earth, you see Israel at the bottom of society everywhere you look.
True.
You know, and these things God said would happen. Now, guess what? You know it's going to happen, or you know that it's the Most High, because he told us this is the sign that you'll see.
Right.
Right. Give me Psalms 94 and 20, all right, before I jump into reading from the book a little bit.
You got it.
About this. Go ahead.
The book of Psalms, chapter 94, verse 20. Shall the throne of iniquity have fellowship with thee, which frameth mischief by a law?
All right, so it says the throne of iniquity, which we know starts with America, right, and all the nations that are confederate with her, according to Psalms 83, it says they should have no fellowship with us, meaning anything that they put in place, it's not for us. Their motivation is not for us. It's their own agenda, all right? We're not supposed to have fellowship with them. They do everything to oppress our people. And read on. Go ahead.
They gather themselves together against
no,
the
I'm
soul.
No, I'm sorry. Read the second part of Psalms 94. I apologize. And 20.
Verse 20. Which frameth mischief by a law.
And they frame mischief by a law. So this, what you're going to read as we get into NAFTA, all right, and which is the North American Free Trade Agreement, all right, this was framing mischief by a law. Their goal was to maximize their profits with the cheapest labor possible. And this is what you're going to see as we continue to read through this, all right? So let me get what I want here. And let me see where I left off. So let me read this. Okay. So free trade, as we shall see in this chapter, deeply distorted many Latin American economies. It became a key pillar during the 1980s and 1990s. So we're talking about very recent times, all right? People say slavery was so, you know, 400 years ago, or, you know, it was abolished in 1865. Why are you still talking about all this stuff? There is different ways. The scripture told us in prophecy, according to Deuteronomy 28, that the yokes of iron would stay on us until we would be destroyed. But you understanding, people would think that that's a contradiction who don't understand the Bible, understanding that Israel would never be destroyed according to all the other scriptures. This is why you got to go here a little, there a little, like the scripture commands you. That destroyed then must clearly not mean that it's destroyed off the face of the earth. It has to mean something else. And that something else is destroyed as a people. This is that Psalms 83 where they were confederate against us and we became hidden. This is the Jeremiah 17 and 4, where we discontinued from our heritage. That's the destroyed that you read about in Deuteronomy 28. All right. So it says, but free trade, as we shall see in this chapter, deeply distorted many Latin American economies. It became a key pillar during the 1980s and 1990s for a new neoliberal economic strategy. Neo means new, right? Like to begin. And liberal. So it's saying a new liberal economic strategy. But liberal for who?
Right.
Okay. So it says sometimes dubbed the Washington Consensus, that strategy also included the mass sell-off of public assets, the privatization of basic government services, and the submission of national governments to the financial and trade dictates of agencies like the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the World Trade Organization. Now, I behoove you to look up all of these things if you want to do your own research. Some of this is outside the scope of, you know, the 1 hour, hour and a half that we're able to do on the show. And it'll take you, you know, to the next place and the next place, which is good, all right, for you to understand. But let me read this again so people understand what's going on here. It says, this Washington Consensus, and I'm going to look it up in a minute, is a strategy that included the mass sell-off of public assets, the privatization of basic government services, so things like privatizing the prison system,
okay.
All right? You know, anything else that's government services. So this was their whole rationale behind this. Let's privatize these things. It's more profitable for us, and we can put our resources somewhere else. And the submission of national governments, all right, so this isn't talking about the United States, this is talking about the world, the submission of national governments to the financial and trade dictates, all right? So we go over Revelation 18 and we talk about that the mark of the beast is obviously sin, right? And we talk about the consequences for that being sanctions and embargoes and things like that that they put on these other countries. And people who have no understanding laugh at that. But you're reading here that the strategy was the submission of national governments to the financial and trade dictates of agencies, because the U.S. was the one that said, hey, let's set up these agencies. Like the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, the World Bank, and the World Trade Organization. And I really, really implore you to look up all of these different entities that they just put out, all right? You'll be surprised at what you see and what you read, and it'll put you in a frame of mind to better understand you know, the book of Revelations and kind of the modern ways that America still exerts her authority and power. I'm going to look up the Washington Consensus. All right. Now, the Washington Consensus is a set of 10 economic policy prescriptions considered to constitute the standard reform package promoted for crisis-racked developing countries. All right. So this is all propaganda in the terminology that they use and the words that they say. Oh, this country is doing terrible. They're in a crisis, right? And I look up the definition here of crisis racked, and it is pertaining specifically to financial. So it says a financial crisis is any of a broad variety of situations in which some financial assets suddenly lose a large part of their nominal value. This is what you're seeing in Venezuela, how I think I had written when I did the show a few weeks back, I had spoke about the dollar value, and I believe it was like 1,000,000%. So like a Venezuelan dollar, whatever the local currency is, it was devalued to the point where it's like something that cost a dollar would cost like, I don't know, $68,000 now or something like that. I mean, that's the other thing that's crazy about paper currency and stuff like that. Like, so you don't need to fully understand economics and how that works. Just understand that most paper currency is driven by, first and foremost, is measured against the U.S. dollar. Right behind that, you'll have the euro and the pound and yen. But the U.S. dollar is the standard that the world bases the fluctuations of their currency on. So it's valued or devalued off of that. Now, that doesn't mean that the U.S. dollar is always worth more. Contrary-wise, the euro was worth more because it was multiple countries backed by it. Right. The pound is more because they handle their financials a little different. But the dollar is the standard. They always measure it. So your numbers that you see when you're trading currency is always reflective off of the U.S. dollar. So the U.S. dollar is the benchmark, right? So if something's worth less or something was more, that's what they go by, right? So when you're dealing with the world economy of how the currency works, paper currency by and large is not backed by anything. The gold standard, the U.S. went off of that, you know, almost a little less than 100 years ago. They went off the gold standard. So the dollar's not backed. At one time it was backed by gold, right? Which made it in some respects more valuable. But they found that, you know, they were not going to be able to grow the capitalist society that America is. All right. You know, capitalism is just kind of it is a democratic society. Don't get me wrong, but it's driven by capitalism, and they weren't able to really kind of expand because the gold is finite. So you're only going to be able to have a certain amount of money circulating, or if not, you're going to have like half pennies or quarter bits or whatever and stuff like that. So if you look at it, you look at your money, right? And I don't want to make this a financial thing. You know, it says it's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, which, by the way, I was reading an article that they said that the U.S. government's about to reach its credit limit, which doesn't mean anything, because they're the ones that dictate that, right? I mean, we just read here how it talks about the submission of the national governments to the financial and trade directives of these world funds and organizations, right? So you have a crisis-racked developing countries, right? And a developing country is a country with a less developed industrial base and a low human development index. So they create classifications for these things. They call it the HDI, relative to other countries. What they mean is relative to, again, the United States is the standard for the rest of the world. Like it or not, it is the standard for the rest of the world. However, this definition is not universally agreed upon. There's also no clear agreement on which countries fit this category. So it's very broad. It's a gray area. So the Washington Consensus was these 10 economic policy prescriptions considered to constitute the standard reform package promoted for crisis-racked developing countries. Now, mind you, don't lose sight of the Monroe Doctrine and what we spoke about last week. The Monroe Doctrine was by and large instituted so that they can deal with Latin America, all right? And when they say these crisis-racked developing countries, first and foremost, it means the Latin America and the Caribbean countries, okay? So it says it's the standard reform package, meaning this is their MO. This is the thing. This is the book that they bring out when they're ready to say that they're going to help one of these crisis-racked countries, all right? By Washington, D.C., based institutions such as the International Monetary Fund. So you read it in the book here, and now we're reading it here online. The International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the United States Department of the Treasury, right? And he also mentions here the World Trade Organization. They don't mention it here, but it's part of it. The term was first used in 1989 by English economist John Williamson. The prescriptions encompass policies in such areas as macroeconomic stabilization. So macro means large. They're dealing with the larger economy at whole. Economic opening with respect to both trade and investment. This is that cheap labor, maximum profits. All right. And the expansion of market forces within the domestic economy. And the market forces, one of them is the U.S. dollar, right? Why do you think people are so concerned about how the U.S. economy is doing? Oh, they're in a recession. When the United States was in a recession in 2008, the whole world was suffering over that recession. Wasn't just the United States. Right. Yes, it hit home more here,
But the whole world, everything was depressed. People were mad. They were talking about that we should do it off the yen. They stopped doing it off the dollar. There was moves by some of these guys to say we're not going to do it off the dollar because it's messing us up. And they, of course, it never happened. People were pushing against it or whatever. You know, you got the social elite, right? Everybody thinks like it's your common, everyday, average, you know, Edomite that's the one that's in the know. No, your coworker at work is not the one we're talking about, okay? Right? These things are done at higher levels above your head, all right? So it says, subsequent to Williamson's use of the terminology and despite his emphatic opposition, the phrase Washington Consensus has come to be used fairly widely in a second broader sense to refer to a more general orientation towards a strongly market-based approach, sometimes described as market fundamentalism and neoliberalism, which is another term from the book, neoliberalism, just to give you a little definition of it. Because, again, I don't want this. You could do like a whole college course on this freaking thing if you wanted to, right? Neoliberalism or neo-liberalism, excuse me, is the 20th century resurgence of 19th century's ideas associated with laissez-faire economic liberalism. So it is not a new thing. It is a resurgence. The 19th century, right, was you always deduct a year. So 19th century was dealing with the 1800s. The 20th century is dealing with the 1900s. Now we're in the 21st century. That's how they do it, right? So it says 19th century ideas. Laissez-faire means, however, like I don't, you know, it's so laissez-faire, like just no rules, no structure, kind of like the time of judges for Israel, right? Like everybody did what they wanted to do. All right. So this is the same approach taken to economic liberalism and free market capitalism. Those ideas include economic liberalization, policies such as privatization, privatizing government services, like we just read, austerity measures. So that's where they go ahead and they restrict certain things. This is where you'll see where they talk about lowering the interest rate. The Fed is meeting and how they lower and raise the interest rate, so on and so forth, and how that, you know, so they call it the prime rate if you're dealing on the consumer side of things. And it affects much more than just the consumers. But you'll get a credit card and it'll say prime plus 10 because they know the prime rate fluctuates. So if the prime rate is 6%, it means your interest rate on that card will be 16. But so the 10 will always stay constant according to your card agreement, but the prime moves. When the economy is bad to stimulate growth, which is why they came off the gold standard, they lower that prime. At one point during the economic crisis, it was as low as 0.25%, means it makes it cheaper to borrow money, which then does what? It allows you to put things in place like privatization. You know, people invest. Basically, the idea is people will spend more money because they can borrow more money, right? So, you know, you could have prime and it's 0.25. Now, I don't recall exactly where it is. It might be around 5, maybe, or 4.99, I'm not sure. But anyway, so that's austerity, deregulation, free trade, etc., right? So that's neoliberalism. And emphasizing the magnitude of the difference between the two alternative definitions, Williamson himself has argued that his 10 original, narrowly defined prescriptions have largely acquired the status of motherhood and apple pie, for example, are broadly taken for granted, whereas the subsequent broader definition representing a form of neoliberalism manifestesso. So he's saying his original idea of this has been distorted, right? So this is what he means. It's so different that it's like comparing motherhood and apple pie. Like it's not even in the same thing, right? So that's he's just using that as an example to say, what do motherhood and apple pie have to do with each other? Nothing. So he's saying what you're seeing now, what it's become, is not what his intent was. Partly this reflects a lack of agreement over what is meant by the term, but there are also substantive differences over the merits and consequences of the policy prescriptions involved. Some critics take issue with the original consensus emphasis on the opening of developing countries to global markets and or with what they see as excessive focus on strengthening the influence of domestic market forces, arguably at the expense of key functions of the state. So anyway, I don't want to bore you with all this stuff here. Maybe I'll come back to this at another time and we'll actually go over the 10. Let me just redo these 10 points quickly because I spoke a lot and I mentioned a lot of stuff. And I know it might be going over some people's heads. So the consensus, as originally stated by Williamson, included 10 broad sets of relatively specific policy recommendations. So fiscal policy discipline, so being avoiding large fiscal deficits relative to gross domestic product. So don't borrow a lot. We're talking about globally, not individually. Redirection of public spending from subsidies. So this is where they went and they put things like privatizing the prisons. He said, and when you redirect them towards broad-based provision of key pro-growth, pro-poor services like primary education, primary health care, and infrastructure investment. So his original intent was that you invest these money in here. Tax reform, all right? Interest rates that are market determined and positive, competitive exchange rate, trade liberalization, and this is the ones that we kind of want to focus on, liberalization of imports with particular emphasis on elimination of quantitative restrictions, licensing, etc. Liberalization of inward foreign direct investment, privatization, deregulation, legal security for property rights. All right, so let me move on from that. Let me go back to the book here, and then I'm going to read a little bit from Revelations in a moment. So it says, while foreign investors and domestic elite prospered from the boom in expanded trade, the Latin American nations that rushed to adopt the neoliberal model soon discovered it did not produce the miracle progress for ordinary people its proponents had promised. By the late 1990s, wealth disparity had grown so rapidly that the region was reporting the biggest income gaps in the world between rich and poor. Ironically, Latin America, which historically had been a major destination for millions of immigrants from around the world, was transformed into a giant exporter of its own people. And the bulk of those migrants headed for the United States because of things like free trade and everything. It destabilized the economy so much that you have these gang-ridden situations that have gotten a foothold. Like, people just think they're so savage that this is why you have all this gang stuff and drugs and everything flowing through there. It's far from it, but it's just the restrictions that they have. There's another documentary I often speak about called The End of Poverty, which is fantastic. You do got to watch it when you're relatively awake, though. Don't try to watch that, you know, after a long day sitting down. You will fall asleep. Not that it's boring. It's just it's a lot of information. And you're going to sit there and kind of start nodding off if you don't stay focused on it. I'm oversimplifying it when I say this, and I've said this before. I'm oversimplifying it when I say it. But this is the best way for me to summarize the whole premise of that documentary and kind of what's happening here. The reality of what happened is that Latin America and the Caribbean has always been a humongous source of natural resources for the whole world. I was using the term recently that, Latin America has been the breast for the rest of the world. Meaning the rest of the world, starting with the slavery, when they came in under actual slavery with yokes of iron, forced ourselves, right? We drank our own water, right, for wood. We drank our water for wood and for money and whatever. We've given the hand to the oppressor. They came in and under the force of death, under the pain of death, they forced us to mine the mines, dive for pearls, work the fields, all right, and export all this stuff out. So free labor, never had to pay for the land or any of the stuff that was there, and they went ahead and the whole world got rich off of this stuff because they went and they exported this stuff all over the world, cotton, tobacco, sugar, coffee. All right, corn, all these type of things. And while other parts of the world, you know, now in more modern times kind of grow these crops on their own, the sheer amount of land and free labor that came from here, they were able to get it a lot cheaper. So it didn't behoove people to grow their own corn and sugar because then they had to follow rules and laws and regulations and this and that. And this is why they were so keen on shipping people for the free labor aspect. It was all to maximize profits and allow them so people to have these tastes and these desires that they had and all these natural resources. You also had precious stones, precious metals, necessary metals, iron ore. Oil was not as big of a deal during the conquistador age, but it's liquid gold in the modern age, even more so, right? Because gold now is more of a status decorative type of thing, right? A necessity is oil, okay? Wood, things like that. Obviously, food is always a necessity, okay? You know, these people who manufacture and produce food and everything, they're not doing it because their desire is to feed the world. It's for profit. It's something that people are always going to need to eat, always, right? And, I mean, they even trade livestock and things like that now. Now, the premise of this whole thing is what happened here was they came into these countries right at the time, and this was where I was talking about last week with the Monroe Doctrine, where they were just getting their freedom from Spain, Portugal, the UK to some extent, and said, hey, we're going to help you out with your economies. We're a developed, thriving economy. We've gone through some things. We know how to do this stuff. We're going to come in and help you guys out, right, and show you how to maximize growing, show you how to industrialize your processes and processing all these precious resources. And we're even going to show you how you can export these things to other countries to make money. And they made money. But what they failed to show them, where the real money is on refining these resources so that they can go ahead, right, and take that next step and become ultra wealthy. And what that means is the refining process is take the wood and turn it into furniture. Turn it into paper, turn it into this, that, and the other. Take the oil and make sneakers and make whatever, because petroleum, it's in so many products, right, all right? Your favorite kicks and all this stuff. A lot of man-made materials, right? Take the gold and show you how to, and I'm not talking about on small scales, because you have, you know, our people are very talented craftsmen, carpenters, jewelers, things like that. I'm talking about on the massive scale that would allow the countries to obtain a certain measure of wealth. And instead, when they wanted these things, and even though they had all the resources to make it themselves, they would import it back to them at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times the cost of what they exported it out for. And then also, as much as they said it was free trade, there was tariffs, there was regulations. You see this with Puerto Rico, right, and the restrictions that they had and the extra fees they have to pay. Stuff can't be shipped straight to Puerto Rico. It has to be shipped to the States, and then from the States it's sent over there. There's a lot of extra cost involved with this stuff, right? Now, I want to read Revelation 18, and let's start at 1. For anybody who thinks that modern-day America's power is not dealing with trade and merchants, all right? Let's get this up.
Revelation chapter 18, verse 1. And after these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory.
Come on.
And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen and has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird.
Right. So he's telling you now that he saw the angel come down. He's talking about, you know, when we're getting towards the final desolation of modern day Babylon. And he's saying, you know, this sore destruction that's prophesied will come here. Now read on.
For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her.
All nations have partaken in part in this. All nations. Remember, you have the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization. All these things is all these other nations being confederate in these ways. Go ahead, read.
And the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies.
And it says the merchants of the earth, merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. All right. I have a little letter next to mine where abundance says power. And this is the power that comes from these free trade things, right? Everything that we've been reading about up until this point. Let me see if I want anything else out of this. Read verse 7. Jump to verse 7.
Verse 7. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously.
America, the greatest country in the world, right? The United States. And lived deliciously. Go ahead.
So much torment and sorrow give her. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow and shall see no sorrow.
Right, because who's going to take America down? Right, I sit no down. I said I'm no widow. Go ahead, read on.
Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her.
Hold on, we're gonna come back to this. I want to read a little more back in the book, right? So we're gonna pick up right from verse 9. I'm gonna jump a little bit. Let's see. No, let me read this part. So perhaps nowhere was the free trade model more enthusiastically embraced than in neighboring Mexico, which formally entered a permanent economic union with the United States and Canada through the North American Free Trade Agreement in 1994. NAFTA set off a stampede by U.S. and other foreign investors to gobble up key portions of Mexico's manufacturing, agricultural, and banking industries. The sudden infusion of foreign capital, however, drove so many small Mexican manufacturers and farmers out of business that millions of people were dislocated and unemployment mushroomed. Thus, instead of reducing the pressure on Mexicans to migrate, NAFTA increased it. The deepening crisis of poverty throughout Latin America ignited a firestorm of popular discontent by the late 1990s. One after another, local governments that had espoused neoliberalism were toppled from power by massive protest movements, or they were routed in national elections. So this is where you see the people come out and they protest. So the United States, by and large, set this up, and they're like, well, listen, you know, you got the scapegoat. We're going to have to just change the whole regime that's there, right? It says the new leaders who took office invariably sought a more socially conscious road to economic growth, one more independent of U.S. control. Their government swept to power thanks to complex alliances between traditional left-wing politicians and labor leaders and newer civil society organizations. Many of those civics groups were based in sectors long ignored by the established political parties and economic elite of Latin America. Indigenous peoples, poor farmers, urban slum dwellers, racial minorities, and lower-level civil servants. With the elections of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela in 1998, Brazil's Luis Inácio Lula da Silva in 2002, Argentina's Néstor Kirchner in 2003, and Evo Morales as Bolivia's first indigenous president in 2005, Latin American leaders began to chart foreign and domestic policies that could no longer be dictated by the United States. Listen to what he's saying here. They started to break away from these unions that they had with the United States, right? Because they said it's not working. It's killing us. It's destroying our economy. People are leaving and migrating to the United States. Over the next decade, the region turned into a worldwide center for mass participation in democracy, for new economic alliances between neighboring nations, and for new social initiatives by governments at home. So they started to make deals outside of what the U.S. They said, we're going to deal with these other countries directly.
Right.
Having rejected the Washington Consensus, several countries in the region promptly showed remarkable progress in reducing their domestic income gap and reducing poverty. And this is the boom you saw under Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, for one example. They under him, they were prospering for a time. Excuse me. Progress in reducing their domestic income gap and reducing poverty. 60 years of U.S. free trade policies, however, have left a lasting imprint, not only on Latin America, but also on Latino migration to this country. The modern Latino presence in the United States, in fact, cannot be understood without first grasping the origins and developments of our government's free trade policies in Latin America. So, we have the rise of free trade zones. Let me get through this part. North Americans at first ventured into Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central America during the 19th century to buy up land and build massive transportation projects. Vanderbilt's Nicaraguan Transit Company. Vanderbilt was the king of the railroads in the United States, all right? This is an old family. This is that social elite that I'm telling you about. This is old, old money, okay? Vanderbilt's, all right? They had monopolized the rail system in the United States. Now the Vanderbilts were seeking to expand in Nicaragua, right? The Vanderbilt's Nicaraguan Transit Company, Minor Keith's Central American Railroad, Aspinwall's Panama Railroad, for example. All these names are the social elite. By the early 20th century, the main methods of exploitation had shifted to extracting raw materials. So this is what I was telling you with the Harvest of Empire. Let's extract the raw materials. Let's get this stuff out. And, you know, the selling of these things back to these people where it came from at a higher cost because it was already once there. This is what we read. Let me get Lamentations 5, and I want 4.
This is the book of Lamentations, chapter 5, verse 4. We have drunken our water for money.
Come on.
Our wood is sold unto us.
We have drunken our water for money. Our wood is sold unto us. All right. This was the exploitation of these raw materials. And it's they say water and wood here, but it encompasses all the natural resources. Read verse 5.
Our necks are under persecution. We labor and have no rest.
Our necks are under persecution. We labor and have no rest. Because why? They're not benefiting from the natural resources that they have in their own countries. Next verse.
We have given the hand to the Egyptians.
By what? By signing agreements, by agreeing to these trade agreements, okay? By letting these private companies come in under the promise that they're going to revolutionize how things are done in this country. And really, it was for them to maximize their own gains. I've gone over this when I've, in particular, when we speak about Domino Sugar and how Domino Sugar was built off the backs of free or very dramatically reduced labor in Puerto Rico, all right? One of the first governors that was down there was not officially a government official, and it was really about getting in first and drafting laws and making things so that they can maximize their personal gains, right? And go ahead. So read verse 6 again from the top.
We have given the hand to the Egyptians and to the Syrians to be satisfied with bread.
Right, so just so that they can have the basic necessities, They've agreed and signed into these treaties with them. So it says it had shifted to extracting raw materials, bananas, sugar, coffee, oil, and to financing the operations of Latin American governments. It was to the point where these private companies were financing the Latin American government. So what does that tell you? Of course, they got sway. A lot of these guys were puppet leaders because of the U.S.'s involvement. The region grew to be so important that by 1914, U.S. companies had $416 million in direct investments in Mexico alone, the highest of any country in the world, and overall accounted for nearly half of all U.S. foreign investment in the world. The period after World War II brought a third shift. A U.S. apparel, then electronics, plastics, and chemical companies started closing down factories at home and reopening them abroad. That offshore production is at the heart of the free trade model the United States has promoted and perfected in Latin America. It is a model that has so far developed in four main stages: Panama and Puerto Rico in 1947, Mexico's border industrialization program in 1965, the Caribbean Basin Initiative in 1985, and NAFTA in 1994. Some of these terms are new terms to y'all. You're like, what's the Caribbean Basin Initiative? And listen, the reason this stuff is so important and why we're bringing it out is that you're going to have dum-dums and knuckleheads that say we're not in captivity no more. Right. How is this? You have your own countries. How are you saying you're not free?
Right.
You have your own countries. You have your own elected rulers and officials. How are you not free? It's important to understand that all these countries, all right, are dominated and controlled. They're in submission. All right, these national governments, like the book said, are in submission, all right, to these foreign policies, to these financial policies that the United States has pushed forth, all right, that the United States has pushed forth. Let me read on a little more. We got about maybe 10 minutes left on the broadcast here, all right? As quickly as industrial plants were shuttered in the Northeast and Midwest, scores of shiny new industrial parks and factory towns, usually called free trade zones or export processing zones, EPZs, sprang up south of the border. By 1992, there were more than 200 of these zones in Mexico and the Caribbean Basin. They housed more than 3,000 assembly plants, employed 735,000 workers, and produced $14 billion in annual exports to the United States. That means they exported $14 billion worth of these raw resources. This is what it was worth to the United States. Imagine if they were dealing more directly with other countries, that $14 billion comes back to these governments, right? And so long as it's managed and done right, you have that effect that's going to go ahead and help support the people. There's no reason that these countries should be third world countries with the resources that they have, right? Logically, there isn't. But the reason is why? They're in subjection, right? It's what we read in Lamentations 5. They're joking their water for money, okay? Their wood is sold unto them. These free trade zones were allowed to operate as virtual sovereign enclaves within the host countries, routinely ignoring the few local labor and environmental laws that existed. Inside the zones, child labor was reborn and the most basic rights of workers trampled. So, you know, when you read scriptures where it talks about our children, all right, and we'll have no might in our hands, child labor, this is what they had going on there, all right? And you still see this in a lot of factories today. It doesn't get the attention that it deserves because it's one of those things where people don't like it, but if it's going to affect your comfortable lifestyle, then nobody wants it. If it's going to raise the price of things, nobody wants to deal with that sort of thing, right? It says, as agricultural production in many Latin American countries fell under the sway of foreign agribusiness, millions of Latin Americans, young people, abandoned the countryside to find work in or near the zones. But the cities to which the migrants flow lacked sufficient infrastructure of roads, sewage systems, housing, and schools to sustain the southern surge in population. Giant shanty towns sprang up almost overnight. The makeshift slums and the new factories around which they developed led to a public health nightmare of industrial pollution, untreated human waste, and disease. I'm going to finish this last paragraph, and then we'll do some commentary for the rest of it. So it says, thus free trade zones, which were meant to stabilize the economies of the countries that established them, only led to more drastic and unexpected problems. While the new factories they spawned did provide a certain number of low-wage jobs for the host nations, they also fueled even more massive Latin American immigration to the United States. Typically, the young Latin American worker from the countryside arrives in the local city and finds work in a free trade zone in factories now commonly known as maquiladoras or maquillas. There, the worker is trained in rudimentary industrial skills. The rigors of assembly production, discipline of time, the necessity for obedience to instructions. It's a modern form of slavery. At night, the worker begins studying English in the scores of private language schools that abound in a new urban environment. He or she becomes immersed in American shows and the newly bought television. In 1993, maquila workers in Honduras were more likely to own a television than non-maquila workers. In fact, they were more likely to own a television than a stove or refrigerator. Each day, the worker devours the Spanish language magazines and newspapers that are easily available in the cities and which glorify life in the United States. The worker quickly learns she can earn 10 times the salary she gets in the maquila doing the same jobs in a factory across the border. Eventually filled with her new consciousness and disgusted with her dead-end shantytown existence, the worker saves up the money to pay a coyote and risk the trip to El Norte. So it's telling you that basically this immigration thing is by and large a result of U.S. foreign policy economically on this stuff. You got anything? I know you're just there like.
Man, I'm just like.
I know. I've been going over this stuff and it's like brothers are just like taking notes instead of. They're just taking notes on this stuff. I mean, to me, it's just such an interesting dynamic here because this is that high level stuff that, like, I mean, and I'm not saying like, you know, you necessarily need to go to these books and stuff like that, but there's a basic way that you can bring this out. Like, oftentimes we go to Deuteronomy 28 and we talk about in one of all things, and I think sometimes we struggle with that, right? Because in one of all things, you know, in New York, it's easy, right? You talk about. You know, the way all the businesses are pretty much owned by the other nations and different things like that. But, you know, we have to be able to make these scriptures alive for people and show them that, remember, it says the curses will pursue us, you know, for all our generations. And they're going to manifest themselves in different ways throughout these generations. It's not like we're going to have these yokes of iron on our neck throughout all eternity. Right. And, you know, there's a reason for that. Like, we have to be able to preach this and, you know, stand up on our feet. So, you know, the liberties that we do have is definitely of the most high so that we're able to go ahead and preach and bring this word out, you know.
Yeah. So I was thinking about it, what I had seen on TV. Uh-huh. I was watching a documentary somewhere in Cuba, how Hershey's chocolate company had a factory there, some part deep in the woods or whatever, somewhere in Cuba or something like that, and how they was extracting all the richness from there of making the chocolate, but the people there is poor. It doesn't make any sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they live in the shanty towns, like you were saying, people live in shanty towns, but they was working there for 30 years until they pulled out, but yet they have the resources. Why are you still living like this? You know, they should be buying from you all, and you should be rich, but it's not like that, you know. But this is the curses that we're going through.
Right, right. It's a modern manifestation of these curses that we're going through. Let's go back to Revelations real quick. I want to read this a little bit so that maybe this takes on some new meaning for some people as we watch this, right? So read Revelations 18 and 9.
Revelations chapter 18, verse 9. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her.
And they live deliciously. Why? Because they were on board with taking advantage, all right, of these countries and our people that are in these countries. Go ahead.
And lament for her, when they shall see the smoke of her burning.
So they said that they're going to mourn and lament for her when they see the smoke of her mourning. Why? Because they just love her? No, read on.
Standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come.
Go ahead.
And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her.
Come on.
For no man buyeth their merchandise anymore.
So because why? They are the leaders of this whole thing, these free trade agreements, all these different initiatives that ultimately the motivation. Listen, nobody does anything, especially when it comes to business stuff, right? Just out of the kindness of their heart.
Right.
There's always something that you're looking to gain from it. Nobody's going to come and invest resources in your country just because they feel it's the right thing to do. There has to be some gain to it. It doesn't work that way.
And that's what China is doing in Africa right now.
Right, 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 right.
They have it's a reason for what they're doing. You know, it's like some underhand mining, you know, business type thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And they're like, hey, we'll come in. We'll teach you how to run your governments and everything and stuff like that. It's more of that crafty council. You're seeing China trying to do that in Africa. They've done that in other parts of the world, right? I mean, North Korea's like down with them to some extent and everything. And, you know, a lot of people benefit from that. China does have a very powerful economy. They do have a large military presence and things like that. They just kind of, they operate a little bit differently in how they roll. So assessment there. That's exactly what's happening. I heard that the Chinese government was like reaching out to a lot of these African governments and telling them, listen, just let us come in and we'll show you how to set it up and how to run the government and this, that, and the other. And, you know, it's kind of the same type of thing that the U.S. did with Latin America when they were out of Spanish rule.
And some of those some of the people over there in Africa are actually turning down the money because they know the underhanding of what they're trying to do. It's like, well, I give you this, but we're going to take more than from what, you know, the resources out of you all. But, you know, it's disturbing. It really
right,
is.
Right. So go ahead. Let's read on this a little bit.
Verse 12, the merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and of pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all thyan wood and all manner vessels of ivory and all manner vessels of most precious wood and of brass, and iron, and marble, and cinnamon, and odors, and ointments, and frankincense, and wine, and oil, and fine flour, and wheat, and bread, and beasts, and sheep, and horses, and chariots, and slaves, and souls of men.
And you understand that, right? Even slaves and souls of men. And you have to remember, this all came to John in a vision. I think as we get deep in Revelation, we forget that where it started, and this is John writing down everything that he saw. So he's seeing all this. He's seeing things that he's never seen before on a measure that he's never seen before, modern ships and modern shipping and industry. And he's letting you know this isn't even everything. He's trying to encompass everything that he saw. And he's letting you know that, listen, this is how this new Babylon is going to exert authority and control over the whole world. That when it burns, these people, right, they're going to be upset that they've seen this and that they're not able to partake in these things. They're not able to get rich off of these things anymore, off of all this stuff, all right? That's all I want on that. Like I said, Lord's will, there's still a little bit more that I want to touch on this and make some more connections. I think a couple weeks ago I had touched on the School of the Americas again, and that's another aspect of how they deal with things, right, where insurgencies and kind of espionage type of things. I moved away from that a little bit, and I jumped into the financial part of it just so that we understand the many devices that is used to continue to, you know, subjugate our people and why, by and large, you see these conditions that are over there. And I know people that are going through it and eating out of a garbage can, a lot of them don't care why. They just want it fixed, right? So if it means, you know, lying down with the devil, some of them are going to do it. But you got to understand that, you know, once that happens, because it's going to happen, right? America's going to come in. They're going to do something in Venezuela. It's not going to stay that way. It's important that our people take these examples to remember that, listen, at the end of the day, all this stuff is never going to change if we don't repent as Israelites and keep the commandments in the faith of Christ. All right. This is what we got to get back to as a people.
True.
So that's the show for this week. All praises to the Most High in Christ. Lord's will will be on next week as well. All right. And with that, we say shalom.
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 this. Hold on, make sure we're totally off air.